away we go. Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Tom, the drive-in today had the air conditioning on. What in the world is going on? 80 degrees? There are many people throughout the United States that would love to be in Arizona right now.
Well, here we go again, Bill. We're we're looking at possibly setting a record high. But the one thing about setting record highs at this time of year, they're nice. They're tolerable.
6 months ago, they were not tolerable, I'll tell you. As I've said it before, I will welcome 2023 to be in the rear view mirror. But today is our midweek edition. It's Wednesday, December the 6th, 2023. We're going to launch into year 14 of the radio project on January 2nd, celebrating 13 full years, launching into year 14. That means 36 years now in TV and radio and in Tucson. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Broadcast Center, five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for local news and talk. We have our live listening at buckmastershow.com, and also all of the podcasts are available on my website as well. Our live line for our telephone interviews, of which we'll do a couple today, is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we check in with one of our two dozen contributors. He is the contributor on public health for us, Will Humble, Director of Marketing and Public Relations and the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association. In more than 30 years in public health, Will has been very busy in this area, including working at the Arizona Department of Health Services. He served in various capacities, including the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Will, how are you?
I'm doing just great. How about you, Bill?
Doing well. I see on Facebook you fired up the fireplace for the first night of a little bit of warmth. I don't think you'll need it tonight, but a couple of nights ago it was very chilly, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was on Sunday evening, and I lit my first fire in the fireplace with homegrown mesquite from my yard.
Wow.
It's a little more satisfying when you grew your own wood, isn't it?
Yeah. So someone came down or came over and cut it all down and got it all ready for you.
No, that was me.
Oh, the wood chopper.
And my chainsaw.
Oh, the wood chopper. Okay. All right. 3 years ago, we were hearing about something called COVID coming out of China. And here we are in 2023. No, wait a minute. Are we 3 years or 4 years out?
Yeah, it's about... Yeah, we're not 4 years out, but we're probably 3 3/4 years now.
Okay. Wow. Have things changed? Actually, there were more heat-related deaths in Arizona than there were deaths attributed to COVID this year.
Yeah. One of our epidemiologist members did an analysis of the leading causes of death in Arizona so far this year, and heat-related illnesses came in number 10, and COVID was 13. Now, that heat death was most, I mean, there's some heat deaths in Tucson, too, but mostly up in Phoenix, and we've had an increasingly challenging problem with people experiencing homelessness, and they are by far the highest risk of dying from a heat-related illness. And with the price of housing and so forth, it's almost twice as bad as last year, heat-related deaths are.
People are still getting COVID, but are they mostly reporting, if they've had it before, are they mostly reporting it's like a cold?
Well, most people, yeah. Well, here's a squealy on my own part. I actually ended up, we went on vacation to Puerto Rico in Old San Juan, and actually ended up testing positive for COVID when I got back, and I had that new booster even.
Wow.
I had a stuffy head for a couple days, and then I recovered, and So I was lucky I had a mild case. Some of the other, it was a wedding we were at, and some of the other people who attended who didn't get the booster and haven't been boosted for a long time had a much more challenging course of the illness, but fortunately everybody recovered.
Was that wedding at the, Ann and I, or that was actually our last trip together in May before Ann was told she was going to die in a few months. So, I mean, that, but yeah. we were in
Old San Juan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I just love those brick-lined streets, and it's so walkable. I mean, I've been to Puerto Rico before, mm-hmm. but we had never stayed in the old part of San Juan.
Yeah.
I really recommend it to your listeners. You have to like that kind of thing. It's not resorty or anything, you know, but it's a real opportunity to go around and walk and go to the store and visit the forts and just hang out in the street and just pretend you're a local, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of atmosphere there. It feels like Europe in the North.
Yeah, it does
North
in a
America.
Lot of ways. Yeah, yeah.
So we got RSV, we got influenza, and then COVID. That was kind of the triad of the shots that I took. How are we doing on RSV and influenza here?
So those are both about 30% higher than normal, using a five-year average for where we are in the season. So they've gotten a little bit of a head start compared to previous years. We're not seeing a big influx, you know, of hospitalizations that's challenging the system or anything like that, but we are ahead of schedule. And when we see influenza ramping up before the holidays, it's usually a worse season because of all the, you know, social mixing and parties and things like that that happen during the last part of December. So we're probably in for a higher than normal year for influenza for sure. RSV may not be as bad, I don't think, this year because it was so bad last year and people have residual immunity. So that's where we are on those two illnesses.
People confuse. And, yeah, excuse me, Will, go ahead.
And you didn't ask about COVID, but we're in an increase in hospitalizations for COVID, but I don't want listeners to think it's anything like 2020 or 2021 or even it's less than 2022 even.
Some of our listeners have been confusing RSV with the common cold. There is a difference, isn't there, Will?
Oh, yeah. Some of the symptoms overlap, that's for sure. So your listeners are right about the symptoms overlapping, but it's a completely different virus. It is a respiratory virus. RSV creates a lot of secretions, more than a normal cold, and it can end up causing, it gets into your lungs, and if you've got a weak cough or aren't coughing enough, it can end up causing pneumonia. Because the bacteria sees that environment with all the secretions from the RSV virus, and it's like, oh, this is a nice home to reproduce. And then you get bacteria, illnesses and pneumonia and stuff. So that's why the RSV vaccine is recommended for people over 60, which I am. And I did get that RSV shot a couple of months ago.
One of our listeners wondered, why haven't we heard about RSV until all this publicity over the past year?
Well, I think it has been, for young parents, they have always been familiar with RSV because it's a real challenge for newborns that are, like kids that are born in, say, September, October, November, December, because they are really small infants when the RSV season ramps up in December, January, and it can be a really dangerous illness for little kids. And so I think new parents have been, you know, warned about it by pediatricians and so forth, and pediatricians look out for it. But up until now, there really hasn't been an intervention for seniors, for people over 60. So you didn't hear much about RSV, although it can be dangerous in older people too. But now that we have a vaccine for it, I think you're hearing more about it, because when you could actually do something to prevent it, it becomes something that people are more interested in because they can actually take action to prevent the illness. So I would urge your listeners over 60 to go to a pharmacy, make an appointment, and get that vaccine. It's a one and done so far. That may change over time when we see whether there's waning immunity with the vaccine. But at this point, it's more like shingles, where it's, you get one. Well, shingles has a booster. It's probably a bad example, but it's probably going to be a one and done like the pneumonia shot is.
All right. We're going to talk about vaccine hesitancy in Arizona, which is one of the leading states. Arizona now has the fourth lowest child immunization rates. We'll be talking with Will Humble about that. But right now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Everybody in the holiday mood at Mona's. Well, they're the home of the Danish Kringle. It sounds pretty Christmassy to me. The Kringle looks like a luscious, Tom, come back here on the microphone. And you always describe the Kringle in a very, very descriptive way. Go ahead. What? Your mic's not on. Your mic is not on.
Oh, a light and tasty, flaky pastry.
A light and flaky, tasty pastry. That is very good. With a variety of fillings, Mona's, Danish Kringle would be great on Christmas morning or Christmas Eve, anytime during the day. Check it out. Mona's, Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. More with Will Humble right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition and our monthly visit with Will Humble, the former director for the Arizona Department of Health, and he is our contributor on public health. And before the break, I was saying, Will, that this vaccine hesitancy in Arizona, well, across the country, the whole movement away from childhood vaccinations has been increasing. But why is Arizona one of the leaders in this area?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call us a leader. Might consider us a failure, actually.
Yeah,
so,
failure.
As you said, the childhood vaccination rates have been dropping nationally because of kind of the anti-vax movement. And also, not just anti-vax, but parents who question and delay their childhood vaccinations because they want to learn more about it. And so that has eroded the childhood vaccination rates nationwide. But it has been more pronounced in Arizona over the last 8 years or so, actually 7 or 8 years. It's been more pronounced in Arizona. And I think there's two reasons for that. Number one, is Arizona has a really permissive law in place that allows parents to just exempt their kids from the school vaccine requirements. And many other states, every state has a medical exemption. So if your kid has a medical condition that they shouldn't get shots, vaccines for whatever reason, then, you know, they can be exempted. So all states have those exemptions. But Arizona is one of the states that has just what's called a personal exemption, which says parents can just sign a little waiver and then they can go to school, public or private. Even the voucher schools are supposed to be vaccinated, but the parents sign waivers for that called a personal exemption. And the states that have that kind of permissive law in place have lower vaccination rates. And, you know, you might think, well, it's the blue states that are strict about it and the red states that aren't. No, you have states like Mississippi and West Virginia have really high childhood vaccination rates, and they don't have these easy exemptions. They have medical exemptions from the school vaccine requirements, but they don't have the personal exemption like we have. And so, one of the reasons Arizona is underperforming is that we just have a lax standard when it comes to school attendance and being up to speed on vaccines. The other is a bit more insidious, and that is that over the last few years, it's become much more difficult for parents to actually vaccinate their kids because a lot of the doctors that had been providing vaccines have stopped providing those vaccines. And it's, you know, and in large part, it's because of decisions and choices that the state health department has been making over the last few years, basically over-regulating doctors' offices such that they throw up their hands in, say, over-regulating them with respect to the Vaccines for Children program. I should have said that. And the doctors are saying, look, we're not going to participate in this federal Vaccines for Children program because state health department's being too strict with us, and we can't risk fines when they reconcile doses. So I'm getting into the weeds a bit on the reason why, but we've lost 50% of the providers that were participating in the Vaccines for Children program. So they threw up their hands and quit. And so what that means at a practical level is that parents would go in for the regular checkups and the, you know, the developmental screens and their pediatrician checks. And usually at the end of that visit would be the vaccines for that age. So if you're 2.5 years old, there's a certain list of vaccines. Well, what's been happening more and more is the doctors are saying, okay, you're done with your visit. Now go to the county health department or a WIC clinic to get your vaccines. Well, that makes the parents have to make a separate appointment, a separate drive, a separate time off of work. And some of them decide, look, I just don't have time to keep tracing these vaccines down. And next time Dr. Cullen's on, you can ask her about what that's doing to county health departments. I mean, some of these county health departments are now overwhelmed with parents that want to vaccinate their kids because they couldn't get the kids vaccinated at their doctor. So I'm getting to the end of my long story here, but – the Maricopa County Public Health contracted with the Arizona Partnership for Immunizations to write a report that looked at why doctors have been quitting, and they published that actually Monday evening. And I think that report has now finally gotten the attention of the leadership at the state health department, and they've, at least on a cover letter to that report, promised that they will look at their processes and make it more provider-friendly so that they're actually encouraging participation in the Vaccine for Children program rather than being so punitive and strict with doctors' offices. And, you know, a lot of these doctors aren't going to come back because they've got a bad taste in their mouth because of the way they've been overregulated. But at least we may be able to stop the exodus and prevent more doctors from leaving than already have.
Actually, Dr. Cullen was our Monday one-on-one guest this Monday, just 2 days ago, and I brought that. The New York Times had a big article that day on this vaccine hesitancy among parents across the country, and one of the reasons that I believe, as I recall, Dr. Cullen said, the social media and a lot of misinformation is playing an impact as well, Will.
Oh, for sure. That's part of it. But that's a nationwide thing.
Yeah.
That's not Arizona specific. So the reason we're underperforming is because it's getting, partly, because it's getting harder for parents to actually vaccinate their kids. The other part is we have a really lax school attendance requirement when it comes to vaccines.
I think it's important, too. We're talking about kids. There's this 30th annual child fatality review that came out, and there's some key interventions I wish you would share with our listeners that that could save lives, Will Humble.
Yeah, the top of the list is really, well, there's lots of things that parents can do, but one of the biggies is really how you put your baby to bed. How do you put your newborn to bed? And there's a lot of suffocation that happens with newborns because they either are put to bed in a crib with a lots of pillows and toys and things like that, you know, or they're put to bed in their crib on their stomach rather than their back. And that can cause suffocation, sudden infant death. Another huge problem is co-sleeping, where, you know, you have a fussy kid and you want them to settle down, and so you bring them to bed with you and they do settle down and get quiet, but that creates a suffocation risk because mom, dad, whoever, can roll over in their sleep and not know that they rolled over on the baby's nose, mouth, and then they can suffocate that way. So safe sleep environment continues to be one of the simplest things that we can do to eliminate some of these unfortunate child deaths. There's other, you know, things like accidents and injuries in car crashes, and that's really about making sure that you've got the right kind of car seat and that you don't let your kid graduate from the car seat too soon. That's one of the things that we see is that parents, like, the kid can now walk, so they think, well, my kid's getting around pretty good, I'm going to take him out of the car seat. And really they need to be in that car seat till they're like 4 feet high almost. So that's a lot older than what some of them do. And make sure that your kids are in the back seat, not the front. So those are, that's sort of the car crash kinds of things. But it, you mean, I can't go over it all, but it's like a 100-page report. But
oh,
you can visit. I got a blog post on it, azpha.org, and new parents can go look at that report. And you could just read the executive summary. You don't have to read the whole thing if you're a parent. And that'll give you a sense of the simple things that you can do to keep your kids safe. Drowning is a continual risk, especially in backyards that have swimming pools and things like that as well.
Will Humble with us on the Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, they grew 21,000 poinsettias. That's got to be the leader here in Arizona for that particular holiday plant, 3384 East River Road. And some of these organizations have spoken for maybe up to 1,000 of them, but they've got plenty, so get over to Green Things. Will, before we close, we've followed the Arizona Senior Care Center's kind of dust up about not really enough oversight. Is there a quick comment that you can make? Anything new on that in the past month?
I know that the health department is trying to improve their processes. They've got some recruitment and training backlogs that they need to address. I would sum it up by saying, you know, that old proverb, trust but verify. Mm-hmm. I'm trusting that the new leadership is trying, but it's not something I'm willing to just believe on faith that they're improving their process. So I'm going to stay on top of it, but nothing huge to add yet. But if they haven't staffed up a lot by, you know, say April or May, I'm going to really start beating the drum again on that.
Yep. Keep it up, Will. All right, Will, I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday season, and talk to you,
you too,
in January.
I'll talk to you in January.
Okay. Thank you very much, Will. All right. Will Humble, our monthly contributor on public health here on the Buckmaster Show, and our quarterly contributor on water, our Arizona Water Quality quarterly presented by Central Arizona Project, is next. Karen Caesar is in the house, ready to join me after we take the mid-show break. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website ChavezSince67.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Once a quarter here on the Buckmaster Show, we focus on what I consider to be Arizona's most important resource, and that is water. It's our Arizona Water Quarterly presented by the Central Arizona Project, Your Water, Your Future. Joining us on the show, Karen Caesar is here, Pima County Representative on the Central Arizona Water Conservation District Board. Good to see you, Karen.
Always great to be here, Bill.
You know, a follow-up to our last meeting, you had mentioned this proposed CAP Water Education Center. Is that project moving forward?
Yes, I'm really happy to report it is moving forward. The board has approved a design contract for this, and we're beginning what we call the programming or the conceptual design phase.
How's that going to work?
Well, it's working great. In the design phase, the first thing you want to do is kind of identify your universe of possibilities. And so while the board and CAP staff have an idea of what we'd like to have in there, we really want to hear from the public at this point in time and find out what the public wants to know about water. So this programming phase is going on right now, and it includes a series of open houses, and one will be here in Tucson this Friday, where we want to give the public an opportunity to come down and tell us what you want to know about water.
And this center will be physically located at your CAP headquarters in Phoenix. Is this correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So our CAP headquarters is in North Phoenix. If people know Phoenix, it's on 7th Street north of Pinnacle Peak.
Okay.
And that's where we have the space for the Water Education Center. But we're also trying to make it something that will, you know, while it's a little far for Pima County, we want to really make it worth the visit. If you have been to CAP headquarters, it's kind of a secure campus, number one, but number two, the canal is right there and you don't even see it. So our hope is with this Water Education Center, we're going to provide a place for people to come and look at our canal up close.
What are you envisioning then for the center?
Well, we're envisioning a space where the public can gain a hands-on understanding of the Central Arizona Project and how it fits into Arizona's water management story. I mean, we all know we live in the desert, and the marvel that is the CAP Canal has really allowed Phoenix, Tucson, and Pinal County to grow and prosper because of a renewable water supply. So we want people to understand that, and we also want to, you know, get people an up-close view of the canal. Our canal is dangerous. I've said if people know Phoenix, there's canals all over Phoenix, mm-hmm. and people can recreate along them. And I grew up near two, but they're not as dangerous as our canal because of the speed of the water and some of our infrastructure. We can't let people safely, you know, get up close to it.
And go tubing or something.
No, or fishing. No,
in the
right.
Canal.
But we're envisioning a water education center that will provide an up close, safe look at the canal, and be someplace exciting where people can, you know, from school field trips to elected official briefings. People will want to go there because it's going to be so cool.
Kind of a community area too for a lot of exhibits, interactive kind of nature for the property.
Absolutely. We've got a lot of need for this, and there's a lot of need for this in Arizona. We did a little study that confirmed this. And so, you know, we want to have exhibits, interactive exhibits, hands-on exhibits to allow people to really not just be a static, boring, you know, museum mm-hmm. type place, but someplace where people of all ages will come and be able to really get a hands-on, immersive understanding of, you know, CAP and water in the desert. And really, my big hope is that it will inspire the next generation of water leaders. We need to get a new generation excited about working in the water field and how important it is to Arizona.
So everybody can learn about the CAP history, how it operates, but there'll be other things as well, correct?
Right. There's so much in there. And part of what we want to do now is, like I said, we want to hear from our water users, our constituents, what's important to you? What are the burning questions? You know, we get a lot of them. You know, can we answer these for people? I mean, are you interested in history? infrastructure, water conservation, something else, all of the above. Our times for public input is right now.
Karen, you mentioned this Friday there'll be an open house in Tucson. Give us some more specifics.
Yes, thanks, Bill. This Friday, so like I said, our timing today to be, you know, for me to be on your show is perfect. This Friday, December 8th, from 11 to 1 p.m. At the El Rio Center, which is at 1390 West Speedway Boulevard. And that will be like an open house public format. You can drop in, see some renderings, get some ideas, and provide your feedback.
Is there going to be, if folks can't make it to the open house, can they do input with like a survey or something?
Absolutely, yes. If you can't make it to the open house, and we recognize that everyone's busy this time of year, but there is an online survey that you can participate in, and you just go to our website, which I'm always promoting, centralarizonaproject.com, and you can search for Water Education Center, and you'll get to a link, and you'll see some beautiful renderings of just what it might look like. We're still at the very beginning stages of design. Also have an idea, you know, have a way to give your input, because this is when we want to get the big ideas out and identified and try to incorporate as many of them as possible in the new facility.
And this hasn't already been budgeted?
Yes, we've got the budget for this, thankfully, and that, you know, leads me into my next topic, which is the CAP budget. Not as fun as a water education center, but, you know, very important to CAP.
This is a budget for 24-25?
Yes. Yeah, we budget on a two-year cycle, and it's really important, puts our finances in place, but it really provides the path for CAP. So, you know, how are we going to achieve all of our critical mission, which is, primarily delivering water reliably to our three-county service area.
Can we get a little bit into this budget? I know that budgets can be kind of, you know, a little bit boring, but this is pretty important.
It's important, and it involves a lot of, we do, like everything else we do with CAP, we really try to reach out and get a lot of stakeholder input onto what our priorities are and what we should be planning for. And then we put together a document that is, as budgets go, is a pretty cool document. And it's available, it's a hard copy, it's a giant binder, or it's available online. And it has actually been recognized by the Government Finance Officers Association with awards for excellent for presenting the information in an easily understandable way. And so, you know, anybody who really wants to get into it, it's all there for you on our website to go look at.
At centralarizonaproject.com, you can search the budget.
Yes, exactly.
And so looking at kind of the health of the CAP, what would you say, how are things going financially?
Financially, we're doing really good. And in fact, we just got a AA rating on our revenue bonds from Fitch Ratings on our $35 million water delivery operations and maintenance revenue bonds. So that really reflects the strong financial profile that we have. And frankly, the good management that we have of our, you know, we are stewards of not only water, but of the fiscal resources that are entrusted to us. And it's really important for CAP to be in a good financial position as we head into, you know, unknown territory here with shortages on the Colorado River.
All right, let's talk about the Colorado River. What is the situation?
Well, it's not as bad as it's been in the past. And I think we talked a little bit about it last time. We had a great snowy year. We had a lot of snow in the mountains. The reservoir levels are going up, and it's really helped put us in a better position coming into 2024, where we will be moving up from a tier two shortage back to a tier one shortage position. So we know this isn't going to last forever, but for right now, it's a good thing.
Good hydrology is real important. I mean, it's a great snow year. It was a good snow year, but you got to have good hydrology.
Yes, yes. And, you know, so that's like the underpinnings of everything. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, good hydrology is not going to save us. We've been doing a lot of other things, and specifically a lot of conservation. And by conservation, I mean, we leave lots of water in Lake Mead to keep the elevations up. And a lot of entities in Arizona, including many here in the Tucson area, have been great partners in basically not taking water they could take and leaving it in the lake to increase the elevations of Lake Mead to keep us, again, from lower tier shortages.
It is remarkable. A lot of water has been left in Lake Mead to try to help stabilize the system, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say almost, we have 950,000 acre feet, so almost 1 million acre feet. And that's just from Arizona, voluntary contributions in Arizona. So, you know, we are really, you know, good. Go us, go Arizona, go Southern Arizona. We've really been helping to get ourselves in a position where we don't have to operate in a crisis mode where the lake levels are plummeting and we're worried about the dam operations. We can start to look ahead.
And so we're dare I say, Karen Caesar, stable for the time being.
For the time being, but, you know, all that's doing is giving us a little breathing room for what we're calling our next big thing, and that's the negotiation of our post-2026 guidelines. And we're, you know, that's we're about 2 years out from having those guidelines expire, so we need to get going on that.
And before we wrap it up, what will the Arizona priorities be at that very important negotiation?
Well, our two main ones right now. One, we want to increase the predictability of any future reductions. Predictability allows people to plan and budget and be ready for whatever cuts are coming. And the other thing is a priority in Arizona is we want to emphasize that we want risks and benefits to be shared across the system equitably. We all know Arizona has the lowest, the junior priority, and we just don't want all the cuts to fall on us. So we're hoping to share those risks and benefits.
Well, we'll be hearing a lot more about it, I'm sure. And the meeting will be very important, won't it, for all the states that are involved with the Colorado River.
There's
negotiating.
A lot going on, and I think our conversations in the next year are going to involve a lot of information about this.
I hope you and yours have a wonderful holiday, Karen.
Thank you. You too, Bill.
Thank you very much. And again, let's give out that website for the Central Arizona Project.
Yes, centralarizonaproject.com, and it's very user-friendly. There's a little search bar. Whatever you want to know, plug it in. Should take you to what you want to know.
And you can learn about the new education center. You can learn about the budget and a lot of other things. Thank you very much, Karen.
Bill, thank you, and happy holidays.
Same. Thanks. All right, take a break right here. Our historian, Ken Scova, talking a little bit about Christmas past in the old Pueblo right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Nice day over in Silver City. Low 60s for the high. It's a little chilly at night, especially, but it's about 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. It's good weather to get out and do some hiking, take a holiday trip. Everything's decorated in heavily on the Victorian architecture, which is really pretty. And then you put Christmas decorations in Silver City, and it's a good getaway. SouthwestNewMexico.org is their website. Only about a 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Let's welcome now our historian, Ken Scoville. Ken, how are you?
Hi, Bill. I'm fine. I'm doing my call today remotely from downtown.
How'd that go, your walking tour?
Oh, it went fine. I always probably go a little bit long because I got too much to talk about, but everybody seemed happy.
Now, when the railroad came to town, of course, everybody started to get Christmas trees because the railroad would bring the trees into town. But I guess people before that would go out and cut their own, right?
Yeah, there's a few scattered reports. But if you think it's quite a distance from what we think of downtown Tucson today out to the Santa Ritas.
Yeah.
So it would probably be more people that would have ranches down in the area that it would happen. And once the railroad arrived and new merchants would come in, the business started to evolve. And again, promotion always being part of it, they'd do some larger trees at schools and other churches to get people thinking about trees. And I want people to really think also today how these three topics really changed and would see the traditions being modified: technology, marketing, and then a very important one, whimsy. And we would see this happening with some of the other traditions in Tucson.
When did Santa Claus start appearing at our department stores?
Well, you know, just wanting to research a little bit more, I Googled when did the first Santa Claus appear in the United States, and best we know, it was in a smaller town in Massachusetts. The owner of the department store dressed up as Santa Claus itself. So that would be 1890s. So by the 1920s, Santa Claus and the Christmas want list, and even now trees, all this would sort of come together now in a wonderful display of marketing, but also enjoyment for the family and the children and all of that.
You know, I've been wondering about the whole evolution of the lights over at Winter Haven. When did all of that start, Ken Scoville?
Well, the developer, in fact, one of the street's name is Richards Row, C.B. Richards. He was the developer. And again, you've got to think about Winter Haven is in the outskirts in 49 and 50. And he'd seen some other subdivisions in California, but he also liked this other neighborhood he saw in Cleveland. So he thought, I was able to get some Aleppo pines trees from this nursery that either was going out of business or just had a big sale. So the main boulevard that everybody loves to go down to is Christmas Avenue with all the Aleppo pines, and then the utilities companies come in with the booms and put them in there like that. And this was a good promotion again. And then everybody sort of took this as this is something sort of neat. And like I sort of say, no committees, no things like this. And people started keeping, even as the houses would sell, let's decorate. So, and again, the ranch houses became the setting for the lights, Christmas Avenue and all of this. And this is why, and we're almost loving it to death. Winter Haven has gotten so crowded in the winter.
Yeah, it really has.
But it's still just a wonderful adventure that really just with a certain amount of whimsy. The last thing, and I didn't put it on our little discussion point, is that it's a whole new tradition that includes technology, marketing, and whimsy. It's the ice skating rink downtown. I just think it's wonderful.
How is that? I wonder how they're doing down there with that.
Well, the other years I've driven by one time in the evening, but it's busy. What could be better? And, you know, the whole thing about ice skating and park, I Googled also Central Park in New York, Rockefeller Plaza. Mm-hmm. Real quickly, his son, Rockefeller Jr., the spaces at Rockefeller Plaza, the low areas where the statue is and all that, it wasn't leasing well. So they had an ice skate salesman, of course. They had a little fountain, and he ice skated in the fountain.
What?
And Rockefeller thought, that'll do it. And so they made an ice skating rink there. Everybody wanted to go watch the ice skating, and then all the places leased. So there's a little bit of whimsy in New York, and now we've got whimsy in Tucson with the ice skating rink in the desert. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it gives folks another thing to do with the kids, not only go to Winter Haven, but then go downtown and do some ice skating. I was just thinking what those ranch homes that were originally, I guess, went up around early 50s. What do you have any idea what they might have been selling for at that point?
I've looked at newspaper ads, and the small ones about $9,000, and the bigger, more expensive, elaborate show places maybe $16,000.
Wow.
So needless to say, numbers have changed. But in reality, Winter Haven hasn't changed, and the kickoff event's coming up, I think, this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right on that. Yes, this Saturday. So I would just hope people to think about how things happen from that technology standpoint, the marketing of things, and just how, like I said, I tried to figure out, ask around, and somehow Rio Nuevo and the city of Tucson came up with this, but I'd like to know who the origin point was. So if anybody's listening today that said, oh, I was the one that came up with the ice skating rink, that would be fun to find out.
Yeah, it would be. Maybe Fletcher McCusker, who listens to the show, can let us know how that whole thing came about. You know, we didn't mention the department stores with the decorated windows. I know growing up in the Chicago area, you know, it was a big deal to go downtown to Marshall Fields, not only to see that giant Christmas tree. Oh, it was so big, especially when you're a kid. But the windows had these fabulous decorations.
Right. And Steinfeld's was the department store for window displays, is from what I've read. We don't have many people around still that remember Steinfeld's and Hockamy's across the street. But Steinfeld's was really known for the window displays, not only for Christmas, but other times of the year. And I've been to New York City once, and it's still just spectacular going down Fifth Avenue and Rockefeller Plaza. So people haven't done that. It's quite the experience with the window displays and all of that.
Well, Ken, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. We thank you for your contribution to my radio program, and I wish you and yours a beautiful holiday season, Ken.
You too, Bill.
Thank you very much. Ken Scoville with us on behalf of Ken and Tom Fairbanks, who always does such a great job engineering and producing our program. That's going to wrap it up for our midweek, our Wednesday edition here on The Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a wonderful Wednesday afternoon. Be back tomorrow.